This is Flight Training the Way I See It with Mike Schiffer.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Flight Training the Way I See It. I'm your host, Mike Schifflett, and I was a former DP for the San Jose FISDO for 11 years. I was a CAA examiner in the UK for the Civil Aviation Authority, and I've been a flight instructor since 1995. And so I've got about 16,000 hours of flight time. That's about 2 years full time in the air. And I'm pretty opinionated when it comes to flying, as you probably haven't noticed. So I run CFI Bootcamp, which is a intensive training academy where we get CFIs done fairly quickly and pretty comprehensively. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, that's CFIbootcamp.com. You can find out everything there. By the way, before I get started, there's a basic membership offer in there. And this is something really good. If you like podcasts, if you like videos, free things, it's at the basic level, it's free. And you get access to some of our previous power hours. We do those every Saturday. Those are from noon until one. We'll talk a little bit about that today and how you can get involved into that. And those are also free. So we have a lot of free things in there. We've got some tribal knowledge videos and in the basic membership site. And that's at CFIbootcamp.com. Go to the top and there'll be a place that says resources. And there you'll find Bootcamp Plus. It'll be under Bootcamp Plus. That's what we call it. Today, I had in mind to talk about going digital versus paper. And I'm going to be doing something here soon in the future that you're really going to want to participate in, I think, some of you. Others, you might teach us something. But we're going to talk about the next thing we'll talk about in the podcast is round gauges versus EFAS, the age-old argument of, you know, which do we train in? Which should we avoid training in glass? Should we only train in glass? Should we go back to tailwheels only, or what's the deal, right? So we're going to talk about that. I have some really strong opinions on that. And then after that, we'll talk about the cost of getting your CFI. So we have a lot of questions that come up about that. And some of you are pursuing that because you're in flight training and or you want to offer it or something like that. And so I wanted to give you some takeaways to that. And there's quite a bit to talk about there. So that'll be interesting. So I got about 30 minutes with you today. And we have a podcast every 2 weeks. And we have a newsletter that goes out every month. And so this is really a read or a talk about what's in the newsletter, which won't be available to the general public until about mid-November. But the podcast will be to you soon. So you'll have that well before then. So if you want to join our newsletter, which you can, then you get a hard copy of basically everything I've said here. Then you can do that at CFIbootcamp.com, and you can just resources, and you'll look for a newsletter, and there'll be a way to subscribe into that. So that's a thing to do. If you ever can't subscribe to something, or you have trouble with something, you can send us an email at info@CFIbootcamp.com, and we can help you out like that. So let's talk about going digital versus paper. So this is a sticking point with me, of course, and I wanted to say, I think paper is, you know, the days of paper are basically going away. So, for example, if you're a big fan of paper charts, I don't know what to tell you, but FAA is not going to print them anymore after a few years from now, whether it's instrument approach procedures or sectional charts. No one sees the need, really. So I'll explain that here in a minute. So, but I think it really wastes resources. So first, you have to have a printing press, and you got to print things, and you got to go. Then the FAA has got to ship it somewhere. Then it's got to get stocked, bought by some organization. Then it's got to be shipped to you, and then you get it, and then you use it, and then you throw it away right after a while, or you use it for something else, maybe. Good tip, if you're going to use sectional charts of paper, if you have any of them laying around, and it's near Christmas time, they make really good wrapping paper. Just saying. Not taking anything out of them, just saying that it's a repurpose, a reuse for that, and that's not a bad thing. Okay, so the advantages of electronic charts and documents far outweigh the comfort of using paper. So now I agree with you, there are some situations paper's better, but overall, I think digital charts and handbooks are definitely the way to go. So this is my pitch on you, try to convince you to switch and become what's called a digital refugee, which is me. So unless you were born with an iPad, come out that way, with an iPad or iPhone, you can maybe remember when there wasn't an internet, maybe, and you can remember the kind of things we did in those days, right? So for example, I was going to Oshkosh in the 90s. There was no mobile phones, really. They had banks of payphones. Okay, that's great. How did we all seem to find one another? You know, when we had to make meeting spots. We said, meet by the flagpole at 4:30, And that way we get everybody rounded up. That way we don't miss anybody, don't have to wonder where everybody's at. And so we just had to have things like that. And now that we have phones, we really don't have that. So those experiences aren't shared by others. In the same sense that I have an electronic everything, by the way. Everything I can get electronic, that's what I do. So I don't like getting mail. I don't like that. I don't like the idea of that. I mean, that's another thing I don't think we need. But anyway, there's that. And then, so the other part I was thinking about was that because we didn't grow up like that, we grew up with newspapers. So, you know, there's this thing, you know, pull it out like that in front of you and it's and all this stuff. And, you know, so I have a digital subscription to a newspaper, right? I took a couple of them. And I like being able to search for what I want to search for quickly. I don't need it curated from the most important story to the least important story. I may want to look at one section more than the other because I'm interested in something or something I know about, something I heard about. And that's a quick search. Also, if I want to see if I'm in the news, I can search for my name, right? I can search for anything I want and see if that's something like that's there. That's particularly important when you get the Sunday editions and there's all these food things and you know there's some recipe that I don't know, maybe something like a Kung Pao steak. And you know it's somewhere in there, you can just type it, immediately it comes up. So we're going to talk about these kind of things here in a minute. Another thing is that it makes economic sense over the long run. So, I mean, you do have an initial investment in the iPad to buy, and that's what I strongly recommend you get. Do not buy a tablet from anybody but Apple, because all of the aviation products, ForeFlight, all those are basically running on the Apple platform and not being supported on the other platforms. So it won't do you very well. There'll be some things you can do, but you won't get the full-on functionality of it. So buy an iPad. I use the iPad Mini. It's this form factor, so it's a small Mini. Mini, it's the smallest iPad to make. And it fits nicely on your knee. You can hold it in a hand like this. And it doesn't, if you mount it on the yoke or near that, if you're gonna mount something like that, it won't obstruct the entire view like the iPad Pro larger ones with the 10-inch displays and more. So this one's good for that. You do have to work a little bit to see what you need to see. But the pinching and zooming, but you'll get there. Okay, so one thing about the economic sense is if you're training to be a pilot or you're gonna train in the future, you're gonna need certain things, like the FAA handbooks come to mind. And so if you get those paper, you're gonna pay somewhere around $25 to $30 per handbook. And so you need at least the pilot's handbook for aeronautical knowledge, you need the airplane flying handbook, you need the FAR AIM, which the FAA produces, but not in the form that everybody's used to seeing it in, like from ASA or other people republish these things. And then you need things like maybe the risk management handbook, you need an ACS, you need a PTS, you might need an oral exam guide if you're so inclined to do that. So all these things are gonna run up to some money, and all the FAA stuff is free. It's all in PDF, and it's right there for you to have for nothing. And so we'll talk about that in a minute and why we'd wanna do that. Also, as far as charts go, why in the world would you want to unfold a chart in an airplane when you just have an iPad that you can zoom out or zoom in, move your finger around anywhere you want to go? You might say that you can see the entire route better. I think that's a case for that, but I don't think that's a big advantage. So anyway, there's that. So you can pinch and zoom. So that's nice if you know how to do that. We'll talk about that in a second. So then also when you travel across the country, my question to you is, if you're going to go from, I don't know, the East Coast to the West Coast, if you do that kind of thing, how are you going to get all those charts? So you're going to get them, what, from Amazon, probably. You'll probably call, or make a phone order, or you'll go on the internet, and you'll get all the charts, which some of them you'll never use. And you'll probably get just the ones you need for your route, my guess is. And maybe if there's a little overlappy state, you might get that one too. So you're going to spend $9 per chart, something like that. And they're only going to be good they're updated now every 58, 56 days. So you don't know if they're current or not. You've got to look at the chart notams and the chart supplements to see if there are any chart notams. You've got to update that on the chart. So you've got that to deal with. And then my guess is if you've not flown cross country in general aviation, piston, non-turbocharged, non-turbine airplanes, flying is one big diversion if you fly in the afternoon, right? As much as you want to go that way, chances are you have to go that way a little bit for 100 miles, go back this way a little bit, maybe you get to your destination or maybe you go somewhere different. So what that means is that you're going to need charts, maybe for areas you didn't even think you needed a chart for. So that, how are you gonna get that? Well, now you're flying, you can't, right? So I don't know what to do, I don't know what to tell you there, right? You're kind of on your own. They used to make there was a Howie Keefe, the name of the company, used to make a bound version of all the charts, right? And it was their WAC charts. And when they made those, and then World Aeronautical Charts, they're twice the less resolution, 1 in a million instead of 1 in 500,000, which the sectionals are. And then where there was airspace, like class C, B, or they would just bring those inserts in from the sectional charts. So you kind of had what you needed, and then you had something that would cover the entire country. But that's, to my existence, those to my knowledge, those don't exist anymore. So, but I can tell you what I have. I have ForeFlight right on this thing, right? And you may be a fan of something else, but that's what I use. And I have every chart in the entire country. And I have all of Europe, right? And I have all the Caribbean. You know, I have all everywhere. And all I do is press the download button. It even tells me. It says, hey, these are expired. You need to download new ones. And I do that. And so then it doesn't take very long. And I have everything I need. Everything I need is right here. And so why would I want to do all that? Go call Amazon, go to Amazon.com and order, or go to a Pilot Mall, something like that, PilotMall.com, and order all those charts. Then they come in a big box to me. Then I have to put them in the airplane somewhere too, right? And that's weight, and it's also space. And so there's that, right? If you're buying just one chart and, you know, you're lucky, there's an airport shop around you. Those things are, you know, kind of throwback from the dinosaur age now. There's not so many of them. The few that exist really specialize and do a good job. Like Pilot Mall does a great job. They're in Lakeland, Florida. And then we have, I forgot the name of the one in Fort Lauderdale, Executive Airport. The biggest probably one that exists. And they do a really good job too. But, you know, they specialize. There's not so many. The industry can't support so many of those. So chances of you having one at your airport aren't very high. Chance of you having to drive some distance to get to one is pretty good. So like for here, we have one called Wayman Aviation in Pembroke Pines, North Perry Airport. And that takes about 30 minutes to drive each way to get there, 25, 30 minutes. And so if we really need something, or they can ship it to us. But again, it's that whole thing. Why do I need any of that when I have it all here? And some people will say, well, I just do better with paper. And the reason you do better with paper is that's all you've ever done, right? It's probably all you've ever done. That's how you work. You developed a workflow based around notebooks and paper and this kind of thing, right? So I'm going to try to help you out with that a little bit. Another thing ForeFlight will do that your paper charts can't do is if there's a NOTAM, FTC NOTAM that comes up, you know, that the reams of paper that you go through to read all those NOTAMs, which I'm sure you all do, the FTC NOTAMs update instrument approach charts sometimes. And when that happens, ForeFlight will put the instrument approach procedure up and it will have a red tab. You click, it says NOTAM. You click onto it to tell you what, if you need to change the chart right there. So I don't have to do any of that. In addition to that, there are instrument approach procedures that come in bound packs, right? And those are by the FAA charts, and there's also Jepson ones, and they're paper. But everybody's getting away from that. Just so you know, airlines aren't using paper. You know, they're using iPads, they're using other sorts of things, and they're using electronic navigation sources with more than one of these in the cockpit. It's not bad to have paper copies of really critical places for backup, I suppose, but I've never felt the need. I'll tell you why in a minute. So as far as now documents go, we talked a little bit about charts. Was something else I wanted to talk about? Yeah, so, there's something else in ForeFlight, which I think, you know, there's no duplicate, no equivalent in paper for on instrument approach procedures. And that's, it has something in the flight plan called Route Advisor. And what Route Advisor does is you're sitting at some airport and you want to go to some other airport. And so you put in your flight plan, where you're leaving from and where you're going. And then you click Route Advisor. And what it will do is it will bring up all of the previous ATC clearances that were given to airplanes going in that same place from that airport. And those are really likely for you to get. Some of them may be turboprop or jet, but you can't do those. And you're like, okay, but you see the piston ones in there too. And you go, oh, that's... I'll just file it that way because that's what they're going to give me anyway, 99% sure. So you have a way to know. Before, in the old, good old days, you know, we would plan our route and everything, and then we'd get our clearance, and it would be kind of nothing like we had, if you remember those days. It would be different. And you're like, and then the other pilots would, in for local to the area, would go like, well, that's what you always get from here because there's a letter of agreement. So you don't know that, right? You have no idea how to get that information. So then in the end, what we did was we just made a flight plan from where we were going somewhere else direct. And that way, we didn't know what we was going to get anyway, so they'll just tell us and they'll be fine, right? So that's kind of how it worked. But you know ahead of time using a tool like this. There's no equivalent in paper for that. You can't call air traffic. I mean, can't call a flight service station and say, what's the preferred route? Or they don't know. So there's that. In terms of documents, take ASA's FAR AIM as a good example. So I'll show you what it looks like. Just for a moment, or I'll tell you what it looks like for those of you who are listening on the podcast. So the ASA's FAR AIM is about $10, and it's completely searchable, right? And what I mean by that is I can search by keyword. if I don't remember what section of the FAR it is. I do have to have a general concept of where things are. I have to know that part 135 and 121 doesn't apply to me. So if a keyword comes up in that section, I can skip that. The other thing I can do is I can bookmark and I can highlight. I can actually take my finger and highlight what I want. And then when I go to search, like say I'm studying, I can go and search by highlight or search by bookmark. And it'll just step me through all the highlights I made or all the bookmarks I made, which is incredibly handy because that's hard to do in a paper copy. You're constantly thumbing through something. This just brings everything up right there and you tick it and as soon as it'll open. So that's nice. And also this FAR AIM from ASA is constantly updated. They don't charge you again. And so you always have a fresh copy, always. So if you're tabbing things, you know, when you can do that, but at some point that data is not gonna be the same. There's gonna be changes. And what are you gonna do, retab everything? Well, maybe, I guess if you're done studying, you don't need to retab anything. But the idea there would be that while you're in the process of studying, if the handbook, or the, not the handbook, the FAR AIM changes, if it's been updated, then you have to get a new copy or a supplement or something. It just doesn't make sense to me, right? So that's why I like things that are updated all the time. I guess another thing we can talk about is, the arguments will come up that, well, you know, aren't you afraid the iPad's gonna fail? And my answer is not really, because I have two things. Well, I have a standard operating procedure, which people don't teach, but I'm gonna show you basically. SOP is how you're gonna get all your stuff ready and what you're gonna do to have backups and to have the things you need so you have a way to function if some of your electronics breaks. So the first thing is the iPad has to be within 2 years of being new. That's one of my SOPs, because the batteries start to go, right? And when the batteries go, you don't know. And so you might say, well, this battery now only lasts 1 hour instead of the 8 it used to before and 9. So you've got that. So one of the SOPs I have is, of course, you have to have 4Flight on your iPad and on your iPhone. And 4Flight subscription allow you to put it on two devices. So that's your backup. And the third thing we have to have in the airplane is we have to have a battery pack. So one of those cubes or bricks that you take and you plug your phone into if it's low on charge. And that brick, if it's a good enough size, it doesn't have to be even that big, it'll support the entire flight. So that way you're not relying on the charging, if the charging unit or the cigarette light sort of, they call it accessory now, adapter, if that kind of goes, then you've got a way to still function, even if your iPad's battery is bad. So you've got that. And then you could print off a few paper charts if you want to, but there's that. And then also, there's the overheating problem, which can happen in iPad, and that is problematic. It's in hot environments, if you have, or the sun is shining on your iPad for a particular length of time, it'll get hot and it'll just shut down, and it won't come back on until it's cool again. So you need to sort of safeguard yourself against that. That's why I have this cover. This cover, I don't have to see where I am every single moment of the time, so I just glance at it, open it up, glance at it, you know, then it's on, and then close it, it's off. And then this takes care of the heating problem. So there's things like that. Mounting issue, there are some, but you know, think about how much more convenient it is to go and try to buy a mount that works as opposed to having, you know, paper stretched out and making things on the chart. It's that, and only seeing this much of the, I mean, when on a chart, you usually have it folded in a rectangle, about that big. So that's all you see. And then you have to unfold it to something else, right? But an iPad, I see everything all at once. I just pinch it down. I see generally what I can do. I zoom up on something that looks interesting or something I need to pay attention to. So there's that. So that's some SOP stuff for the overheating and things like that. But anyway, I have a checklist for that. And that's what I use before I go fly. Now, in terms of charts and publications, you know, pilots are a strange bunch, you know. We usually invest thousands of dollars in learning the latest Garmin 1000, you know, from Garmin in an airplane with an instructor, but they won't invest any time in understanding how to navigate using digital sources instead of paper. Like, that seems to be a stretch. And I know why. So I'll talk about why, and then we'll talk about what we can do about it. So in general, I find that some people, not all, but those who are not leaning towards digital methods and look towards paper, they're not really comfortable using a computer or an iPad or anything. I mean, they're a phone maybe, but you know, and you don't have to be comfortable. You don't have to fly an airplane. You don't have to do any of this, but I'm saying that's what I notice. And I point out what I notice, right? And so I typically say if someone has quit working, the last technology they're ever gonna know how to use is the technology that existed when they retired. Everything else, and you look 10 years later, and those people are behind. You know, so really behind. Not, but they don't have to be ahead because they don't work anymore, right? But yet certain things come along that are very interesting and exciting, and they get frustrated because they can't use that new tool, and they really, really want to. They really want to, and they go like, I'll give you an example. So some of my older friends saw me one day at this little bar, club thing. They showed me, there was some song was playing that I thought, oh, it's an interesting song. So I took my iPhone up and I loaded up an app called Shazam, and I just clicked it and it listened to the song and it told me what it was. And all of them had iPhones. Almost everybody had an iPhone that was at that place, and they all huddled over and they wanted now me to show them how to do that. And so I said, well, you have to go to the app store and download it. So then their eyes got all big, like, I don't remember what Apple ID is and this sort of thing. And then, or I got to go home because it's written down on a piece of paper somewhere, right? Another thing, I have everything right with me. I use Evernote, by the way, and everything's with me all the time. So I'll explain what that is in a second. So anyway, the idea is that when I tried to download it for them, and it didn't work. And I'm like, why isn't this working? Go to the App Store, it won't download. And then it dawned on me, because I looked at it, I said, when was the last time you upgraded your operating system? This phone is like 3 years old. And they said, what's that? And so it's whatever come out of the box is what they were using, and it was so outdated. And I was reluctant to install the new iOS because what happens is then there's some changes made, and then they're used to the way they used to do it. So anyway, so what I'm getting at here with all this rant about that is that you must absolutely have to take a class. It can be a short class. On the iPad, it's a 20-minute class about how to use the iPad. How to use the iPad, and maybe the next level up, which is apps and applications, and where the information goes. So if you're downloading something, where that ends up, and how to use things like AirDrop, which you can pass things back and forth between iPads, so things are easy, right? So you have to take a class in that. If you're using a laptop, yep, and a Mac or whatever you're using, you have to take a class in that, because otherwise you're going to lean on somebody else for technical support. And then what happens there is you never quite fully understand the tool. And so then what happens is you'll never quite get the digital, because it'll always be some big cumbersome thing. But once you understand the thing to a degree that you can use it, like for example, I would say, here's a good example. So every time that I send somebody a link to something, that like a Dropbox link or something, and they get it on their email, they're able to open it. And then they open it up in maybe Adobe Acrobat. They can figure out how to do that. So it's a PDF viewer, right? So you look at that. And then they close it. And then they go, I want to open that again. Where'd that go? Where's that at? How do I do that again? And they go back to their email and they click that link again. Are you kidding me? Right? If you just understand 10 minutes on a video, you'll understand where the file is and you get it every time. You won't have to ask anybody. And it'll also make you shine, because you'll be efficient at using this tool, and you'll know where things are, and you'll know the things you like, and you know the things you don't like. And the things you don't like, you can use paper for if you want to. Like some people take notes on a notebook, and that's fine. I don't particularly do that, but you can. So I use a tool called Evernote. That'll be a big plug for Evernote. And Evernote is a way, it's notebooks electronically, right? And then, so for example, I don't like going through physical notebooks because I can't search them. I have to go through pages and go, where did I put that, right? But what I do in Evernote is, for example, I rewired my garage. And when I did that, I made sketches of how I did it. And then what I did was, of course, Evernote can't digitally recognize what that is. So it can recognize text. And so I put in big block letters at the top, wiring diagram for garage street wall or whatever it was. And then I got a big block diagram, I dragged that into Evernote in a notebook that's about the house. And then when I want to look for something, I just go to Evernote and go wiring diagram, and all those will come up, and I'll pick the one I want, or I'll sit wiring if I can remember what I called it. And then all the images will be there as well. Anything, a picture, whatever I put in there. So that's how I move through the world, is that way. And it's easier, because then when I go, like I went to, someone says, always ask me what their password, all that. I have it. It's all here. I don't have to go anywhere else. I don't have to go and get that find that piece of paper or the note on the refrigerator. These kind of days, you can deal that way, but you're not gonna have the best experience in the air that you could if you were just use certain things. ForeFlight comes to mind. I think a lot of people can go that way. But again, learn how to use the tool before you put ForeFlight on it, because it's gonna save everybody a lot of time and aggravation, right? So that's the main thing. Okay, now moving on. Let me see what else I need to say. All right, so what I'm going to do is, if you don't know, we do something called the Power Hour. And it's on Saturdays. Every Saturday, it's not a holiday. And it's from noon Eastern time to 1. So 1600 UTC until 1. And it's an hour of solid content on really cool topics. Like we've done an hour on radio communications, how to get what you want. I mean, an hour on that. We've done deep dives into eights on pylons. We've done marketing 101 for flight instructors. We've done 57 episodes. And so I'm going to do a special one. It's going to be a little longer, and it's going to be in a few weeks' time. And it's basically how to transition the tools I need to show you what to use and show you in real time how to use those tools, where you can get them, what prerequisite stuff you have to get. So if you decide to go down this path, you're going to have a video that you can go. We'll make it public, and then it'll stay. You can download it, and then you can use it and see if you want to do that. At least you'll have the right things. And all the things I use, I have vetted over so many years. So that means you can buy a lot of things that say they do this or do that, but the stuff that I have works because I've vetted it over that many years. So that's what we're going to do. I'll let you know where that's at. Now, the way you find out about this is you go to cfibootcamp.com, and the very bottom of every page is a red bar, and it's an opt-in for the Power Hour. And if you do that, we send you email reminders, usually on a Wednesday or Thursday, and we send you some just before the show starts so that you don't miss out. And we usually have between 50 and 100 and something people will, depending on the topic, will be in the room. And then you'll see what we have to say. And it's quite a nice show. People really like it. And there's that. So that's what we want to do. And also, one thing too, is I think I told you about the basic membership site. You can also go there to cfibootcamp.com, resources, bootcamp plus, and just join the basic membership site. It's free. It doesn't cost you anything. And there's a lot of good stuff in there. We made it like that on purpose because chances are if you're in that site, you're probably wanting to be a flight instructor at some point, or you already are one. And we have things for you later that we can show you, or you can come to our website. You'll know because we'll have touched you enough times during the basic membership site, meaning that you'll see things and it'll draw your attention to say, oh, I should go back to the website and look at this other thing or do something different. That's kind of why we do it. But it's really good content. Okay, so that's where that's at. So then let's talk about round gauges versus EFIS, the age-old argument. I attended a conference not long ago. And it was on a panel, and the panel discussion was, you know, should we teach, is it right thing to do to teach in glass cockpit airplanes versus round gauges? Shouldn't we insist upon that? Because we're creating people who just are automation dependent and this and that. And so I listened to it all. Of course, I have a very strong opinion about it, you can imagine. And I said, well, if you are, what are you worried about here? I mean, are you worried that people are going to use automation? I get that. But we're teaching flying. In the beginning, we're not using automation. We're teaching people how to look outside and then look at an instrument inside or instruments inside and make a decision whether they did the right thing or not, right? And keep doing that until we get it down, right? It's kind of what we do. We look outside, look inside. This technique's been around forever. So whether you're looking at a glass display or looking at a round gauge, it doesn't matter if you know where to look. If you get bogged down on the programming and automation too early of a stage, well, yeah. And they said, well, what about coordinating the airplane? Because you have a ball, right, in the round gauge airplane, and you have a triangle with the little slider bar that goes left and right in EFIS. And I'm like, is this a thing? I mean, are we teaching our student to use the ball in the round gauge airplane? Because I certainly don't tell my students to use that. Because if you let the ball come out of the cage, the yaw's already happened. And then what are you doing? Step on the ball. What does that mean? Step on the ball. That means I let the yaw happen, and now I'm correcting it based on what I see on an instrument. Can I just feel that? Can I look outside and see that? I mean, then I don't have to worry about the ball leaving the cage, right? So in the same sense, if we teach flying the right way, now that's not true under IFR, just so you know. Under IFR, you need an inclinometer because forces can fool you and be different. So that's different. But if you can see and you can feel yourself sliding, you already know how to coordinate an airplane. We can talk about that too. Maybe we'll have an episode on that. So anyway, I just say that, so it doesn't matter. Otherwise, we can make the argument we have to all go back to flying tailwheel airplanes because those airplanes taught us to coordinate, taught us to do this. We don't have to do that. You know, and if you don't like that, I mean, and people don't like hearing it, I'm just saying, well, get used to it because Cessna, Piper, all the rest aren't making any airplanes that don't come with EFIS. There are no more round gauge airplanes being shipped that are for flight schools or for individuals. They're all EFIS, all of its class. So it's only a matter of time before the fleet gets changed. And even you see it now, even it's sooner than you think because a lot of these airplanes that you could buy for maybe $100,000, like older 172s, $80,000, To put EFAS in there, to put a full-on head-on thing was, you know, 40 grand is like as much as the airplane is. It doesn't make sense. But now there are plug-in modules, right, from Garmin, Garmin and Aspen and others that are just plug right into the two holes, attitude indicator, heading indicator, plug it in, do a little bit of wiring in the back, you're good to go. You've got EFAS now. And you put a GPS in there, which most people have. And so that's coming to a theater near you, right? And it doesn't mean we're going to make pilots any worse. And so that's what I say. So I said, it's our responsibility to ensure we're teaching flying the right way. You know, that's our job. And so it doesn't matter whether you have EFAS or the other way around. So that's that. Now let's talk, last thing I want to talk about is the cost of getting your CFI. Because people, I get this all the time. And so I kind of wanted to, because this is what we do for our job. My job is to create flight instructors. That's my job. That's all we do. We don't do anything else. We teach CFI, CFII, MAI all day long. That's all we do. So we're very specialized in it. So then the question I get is, why is our hourly rate so high? It's $105 an hour. Oh, I know that got a bunch of you, right? And then in Miami, if you go to a regular old flight school, it's $50 an hour. So we're more than double the cost. So why is that? The answer to this question is that those schools don't do CFIs. And if they do, they do very few of them. And then when they do, they always have the guy that's been around for a long time, because you have to have more than 2 years or 2 years and more than and 200 hours or more of dual given before you can instruct initial CFIs, before we can recommend them for practical tests or teach any of that. So there are plenty of people who have that but don't know anything about aerodynamics anymore, airspace, don't know anything about the fundamentals of instructing. They just don't know. And all they do is student pilots, private pilots, or maybe in the occasional commercial, right? Occasional one. And once every 5 years they do a commercial or something. And so that's what they know. And so that's the education you're going to get is I'm going to tell you all about student pilots, mostly the stuff we do here. And I'm going to show you how to train for a private pilot and what experience and maybe the commercial. That's it. So all the other stuff is not known. And so that leads it to who? To you. Just self-study, I suppose, something like that. So our CFIs, we have to pay them, because the type of CFI that you need is someone who's a teacher first and a pilot second. All right, so that's me. I'm a teacher first and I'm a pilot. I just happen to be a pilot, right? And so what that means is I have 16,000 hours of flight time. And when I teach a student, I know how much ground instruction I have, an enormous amount. And when I teach our initial CFI class, if I do that, I'm not bored. I like it. I like seeing people learn and get it. So that's what a teacher, that's why teachers like teaching, right? Other people who are teachers by default, because they're maybe building time, and once they get close to that time, they're starting to get effective, but now they don't want to do it, because sitting in a jet is easier than teaching someone, way, way, way easier. And so then, in order for me to keep CFIs, or to make life plausible for them, I have to pay them a lot more. And it's a specialty, the area specialty, right? So you can go ahead and pay $50 you want for a flight instructor, but you may just get what you pay for, which may mean that sometimes it goes like this. You say, I'll do it at my local flight school. And that's all fine. All this is fine if it works, right? So, and then we hook up with an instructor who does one of these every 2 or 3 years, and then doesn't really know the content that well, but basically has you come in every week, for once or twice a week, because that's all they want to do. It's just when they want to do it. And then they make you make your own lesson plans. We'd never have you do that. We show you how to do it, but we use all of our own, because all of our own are right. We've done it this way. We've taught flying for 100 years. There's no reason not to have a complete set of lesson plans. I teach a math class, right? And taught a math class. I didn't design that curriculum. So when I went there, I used lesson plans for that class, right? And I just make worked examples or added to that. I didn't make my own. That'd be just silly, right? You know, we taught this kind of stuff for a long time. So the reason that they have you do these lesson plans is because it's going to, what it would do for you is it would make you study more and study the things you don't know instead of them teaching you, like bringing you up to speed. So that's why they do it, is because the aeronautical knowledge is usually pretty poor. I can say for the most part that most people who have commercial pilot certificates in their pocket don't have aeronautical knowledge at that level. They just happen to know basically what was going to be on the test. They had an idea. And if they didn't know what was going to be on the test, they probably wouldn't have passed it. That's what I've seen. Not everyone, but you get what I'm saying. More people who are in a career path tend to take things a little more seriously. And also older learners, when they know something's relevant, they'll focus on it and they'll do it in detail. And if something's irrelevant, they'll chuck it like that. So there's that going on. So this is what we do. And so it's a rare person that we can keep for a long time. So that's where we get at. So that's the reason for it. Now, also, I was going to tell you that the good news side is we have our online course, which is lecture. Sorry, the online course. We have our online course, which is lecture. And that course is about 42 hours long. Then we have our seven-day class, which is a live class. It's scenarios, right? Scenario-driven class. So you use the information you got in the lecture. And that's about 40 hours long. 42, depends. 46 can be as much as. And you put those two together, and you have almost 100 hours. You have 90 hours of ground instruction before you ever work one-to-one with your CFI. You know, and so this is a good base of knowledge. So that you're not paying $105 an hour for. You're paying $1,200 for our online course, and you're paying $850 to sit in the classroom and be virtual. So $2,050 is what you're paying for that. And that saves you a ton of money, right? And also with the person back at the local flight school, there's no light at the end of the tunnel. It's like, when do you think I'm going to be done? They say, well, then when everything, I don't know, at some point. I can't really say. They'll say that. So, and then you just keep going, 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 going. And then you don't even know where you are. You have no syllabus, no structure, no plan. So in a lot of cases, I wouldn't say this is true every time, but this is what we hear a lot. So then, so the next thing is, okay, so then you come to our place or someplace like us, right? And then you you end up having light at the end of the tunnel. And if someone would only use a syllabus, that would be very helpful. And so I like the guys who say, where's your syllabus? It's right here. Right, all up here. That's why I don't know what's up there, right? So I got to see it. And by the way, it's not going to be paper. Yeah, so just recapping that. So the guy or the person who's doing the instruction in the middle of nowhere, you know, hasn't done one of these for 5 years, you say, where's the syllabus we're going to use? What's up here? Right up here. And you go like, well, I don't know what's up there, right? Show, you know, how am I going to know? And so I tell you what, I don't want to see. I don't want to bring up paper. Show me on the laptop. I'm fine with that. Or whatever, an iPad. I'm good with it. And then you can send me a copy right now. I don't have to go print it. Nothing. So there's that. So the one way that we have found success with using that local CFI is to take the knowledge side of it out. Because the flight side, typically, you know, they can be quite good because they've been doing it for a long time. But recognizing that their aeronautical knowledge isn't quite what it used to be. And the other hallmark of a teacher is we're always doing continuing education, right? And that means that whatever's current, I'm current with. If it's a new handbook, I know the handbook, right? If it's a new regulation, I know the new regulation. And so I just keep up with all that. So it's always fresh and always current. So therefore, there's not any holes in my aeronautical knowledge of stuff I have to teach you. So, and or my CFIs, or our CFIs, as you say, at the company. So that's what we've got. And then, so the way we have had success with it, that's the point was there, is that people will use our online course because they know the aeronautical knowledge is tricky. And so they'll get that. And then they'll go to their instructor and do one-to-one. If that's not quite enough, if they don't feel like they're getting anywhere with that, then they'll take one of our seven-day classes, the scenario class. And then they'll either do that remotely through via Zoom, or they'll come to our place. We do them once a month between Miami and Palo Alto, California. And then that is enough. So after that, you can always go back to the instructor who can always teach you how to fly from the right seat and do about 15 hours or so of preparation time, depending on how long it's been since you did your commercial. If you come right off a fresh commercial, it takes us about 10 hours to finish you, a 10 hours flight. If not, 15, some depending if you've been flying jets and you haven't been in a piston airplane since you were like 15 and now you're 60, it's gonna be a while. Yeah, so just so you know, right? And all the aeronautical knowledge is different. It's not IFR, it's all VFR. And it's not transportation, it's not going from here to there, none of that. It's all just going to the practice area and doing commercial maneuvers. That's all it is, right? And private maneuvers. And so that's the gist of it. So that's the reason that it costs more. The good news is it doesn't, you know, probably like for example, I would say the typical student would spend 15 hours in the airplane with us. That's 15 by 105 for the dual rate. Okay, then there's about 6 hours of maybe seven of pre and post-flight briefings where we listen to you deliver the lesson before the flight and we critique that. And then there in the post-flight is what did you do right, what did you do wrong, how can you improve? And then finally after that, the last thing there is there's about 10 hours of preparation for the oral for the specific DPE we're gonna use. So we just prep you for that because now the training's over. And then maybe, I think that's about it. So that's about the entire thing. So you can see our side, we do a lot better on the ground side than we do on the flight side because we don't have you for that long. We don't have you for 50 hours, 60 or 70, like a private pilot student, right? So, so in that sense, the cost is really constrained. Because the other thing we can say is that you can get a flight instructor, maybe 50 or 60 bucks an hour who would do this for you, but they're gonna take longer to get it done. Or you're gonna fail because they're teaching it to you wrong. And if you think about it, if we finish you in 15 and the other CFI finishes you in like 22, there's 7 hours of extra time that you're paying that $50 an hour for, and you're paying for the airplane, which is 160, 150 on top of that. So when you really look at the pie chart to see what the biggest piece of the puzzle is, it's not the $105 an hour versus 50. And you really want, and plus every day you're here, you're spending money, right? Every day you're not a CFI, you're losing seniority with an airline if that's where you're going, which when the layoffs come, you know, they start at the bottom and they feed their way up. So you can figure that out. And the other thing you're doing is you think of this last thing I wanted to say, is you're working on being a career pilot in an airline. The last years that you're gonna fly, you're up to your 65th birthday, those last years are probably gonna be in something big. And it's gonna pay you pretty well at that point. It's gonna pay you like in the order of 260. So if you take a year longer than necessary to get your CFI, you just lost the difference between what you're gonna get paid and that the previous pay scale, what you got, and that 260. So you're losing out on that income too. So it just doesn't make any sense not to do it in the most efficient way you can. And so that's it for this bi-weekly, or every 2 weeks, I would say. I would call it every two-week podcast. I hope you enjoyed it and you got to see the inside of my soul there a little bit when I told you all the things I thought. And I'll keep doing that because someone's got to say it. So that's it for this week, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Thanks for listening, guys. Thanks. Bye. And goodbye.
This has been a production of Flight Training the Way I See It. News, tips, and opinion.